You are what you read. We're trying to fight in a media world that is completely and utterly trying to distract us with disinformation. And so part of the Reformation Society, which every Thursday night we're trying to tackle different subjects from doctrines, events in history, personalities. Well, for this workshop, let's start off with You Are What You Read. Books are stepping stones to success. Some years ago, George and Alec Gallup undertook an exhaustive investigation as to what makes some people more successful than others. Using the polling techniques that have made them famous, the brothers researched and wrote a book. One of the conclusions was, successful people read. Books provide a foundation for constructive conversation. George Gallup found that reading was essential because it makes a person ready to converse. People who read have a broad knowledge and more information with which to make evaluations and decisions. Libraries are actually gyms for the mind. Reading is to the mind what exercise is to the body. Books are minds alive on the shelves. Books provide inspiration from examples of excellence. And by taking up one of these books and opening it, we can hear voices of people far away in time and in space. By reading, we can hear great people of long ago speaking to us mind to mind, heart to heart. If it was announced that Martin Luther was speaking at a particular church, can you imagine? And if it was announced that John Calvin was speaking at a particular venue, or that Charles Spurgeon was speaking anywhere, if it was announced that David Livingstone was speaking at an event, many Christians from around the world would show up no matter what the cost, distance, travel expenses and problems would be. But we need to remember that when we open up a book by one of these authors, we can hear them speak. And we can learn from them in a greater way than you could if you just heard them at a single meeting. That's been my privilege to meet with and enjoy supper and conversation fellowship with Dr. R.J. Rushdoony, R.C. Sproul, James Kennedy, many great authors, George Grant, Gary DeMar, many others that you can think of. And yet, I've learned more from their books than I possibly could have from the personal interaction with them. Books can be character shaping, for good or ill, depending on the quality of the book. A man is known by the company he keeps, and it's also true that a person's character is to a large extent developed by the books he or she reads. A man is known by the company his mind keeps, and a book is good company. We need to learn from the past. A good bookshelf for a Viking. The reading of all good books is like a conversation with the finest men of past centuries. Books can be a soul food. In books lies the soul of the whole past time. Books give you an advantage over people who don't have books. Mark Twain observed, the man who does not read good books has no advantage over the man who cannot read them. Today we've got a lot of people who are technically literate, but they're functionally illiterate. Who's your best friend? One man said, the things I want to know in books, my best friend is a man who gets me a book I have not yet read. Libraries are treasure troves. Walt Disney said there's more treasure in books than all the pirates' loot and treasure island, and best of all, we can enjoy these riches every day of your life. Think of what made Walt Disney so popular, so successful. He took famous old books, Sleeping Beauty. He took Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. He took these and he made films on them. He took scripts from the best of books of the past. And as I said, there is treasure in books. In fact, he found his treasure in bringing many of those books to screen. We can live life to the fullest. Can you imagine having a bathroom like this? Don't know if that's wise. You want to look after your books better than that, but interesting concept. In a very real sense, people who have read good literature have lived more than people who cannot or will not read. It is not true that you only have one life to live. If we can read, we can live as many more lives and as many kinds of lives as we wish. Books have secrets for success. If we encounter a man of rare intellect, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, we should ask him what books he reads. It's often been a challenge for me to ask people like George Verver and people like Brother Andrew, Uncle Erlo, Reverend Erlo Stegenson, what are the most impactful books that you've read? And to note those and seek them out. Truths that transform. Charles Spurgeon counseled his students, master those books you have. Read them thoroughly. Bathe in them until they saturate you. Read and reread them. Digest them. A student will find that his mental constitution is more affected by one book, thoroughly mastered, than by 20 books he's merely skimmed. In fact, this is one of the most important things in home education, not to throw the poor student dead with more books than anyone can assimilate and read, which many curriculums seem to think is the way to go. No, less books, better books, more thoroughly absorbed is far more impactful than mountains. It's not the number of books, it's the quality of books and how well we've absorbed the messages. There's an interesting concept of having your hammock and ladder by a tall bookshelf. Choose wisely. Daniel Webster recommended it's better to master a few books than to read indiscriminately. It was his contention that to master a few great writers is preferable to skimming a multitude of lesser works. The tried and tested is always better than the current fashion. C.S. Lewis recommended, if one must read only the new or only the old, I would advise them to read the old. It's a good rule after reading a new book, never to allow oneself another new one until you've read an old one in between. I read old books because I'd rather learn from those who built civilization up than those who break it down. And this just brings up an example of the marketing scams that you get these days. Just take not that long ago when out came this worthless piece of trash called The Shack. And the publishers had the audacity to say, The Pilgrim's Progress for our generation. Pilgrim's Progress is the, aside from the Bible, the best-selling book in all of English history. For 350 years, an example of excellence. Charles Spurgeon said he had read Pilgrim's Progress 100 times in his life. And that wasn't the abridged version. To think that anyone's got the audacity to have a forgettable fad and compare this filled with trash, imagination, and heresy, and try and compare it to the best, it's just so laughably despicable. It's so balachlik. It's unbelievable that anybody could take it seriously. And yet The Shack was getting so... There's so many, especially TV, magazines, so on, who treat whatever's new as somehow more important and better than anything that's been before, which is the exact opposite of reality. The old, tried and tested is always better than the new fashion and fad. Reject the shallow and the superficial. Inferior books are to be rejected in an age and time when we courted the whole libraries. Or worse still, just the internet. TV. If kids are entertained by two letters, imagine the fun they'd have with 26 letters of the alphabet. Open your child's imagination, open a book. You have been lied to about everything. The illiterates of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot unlearn the many lies they've been taught to believe. My first visit to America, January 1988, I heard Ronald Reagan speak personally. In fact, he walked past me so close I could have touched him. I was in the fourth row from the front. He walked right past, up on the platform. And one of the first things he said is, one of the most dangerous words in the English language was, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. He said, government's philosophy seems to be if it works, tax it. If it doesn't work, subsidize it. The closest thing to eternal life you'll find on earth is a government-subsidized program. And he said, it is not that liberals are uneducated. It's just that so much of what they know just isn't so. And that is the problem. We've got disinformation worse than lack of information. Reading is an act of resistance in a landscape of distraction. The world wants you to watch the latest movies, series, Marvel comics brought to screen or whatever, but forget about all the screams of the media and the advertising and the billboards and what TV is talking about and the CNN news cycle or whatever. The most important thing is old books on the shelves. They've got more to teach us than this endless landscape of distraction. A child who reads will be an adult who thinks. Reading to children, even before they can understand words, teaches them to associate books with love and affection. One of the most important times in upbringing of our children is reading time. And I was reading to our children long before they could talk. It's so important. And they loved reading time. Even before they could read, they were associating the time of reading and the pictures with love and knowledge. Savor the special. No man's life is long enough to read even those books that are good and great and famous. So why waste your time with lesser works when some of the greatest are available? Select the superlative. Read the best books first, or you may not have the chance to read them at all. Francis Bacon wrote, some books are to be tasted, others are to be swallowed, and a few are to be chewed and digested. There's some books that I've marked up and got all kinds of notes and allocation, and I've just gone to those books again and again and again, and you just can't get enough of it, versus others that you skim through. Books are preparation for life. Many times the reading of the book has made the future of a man. I can think of quite a few examples. Just one strange example, maybe, was I had just finished reading When Hell Was in Session by Senator Jeremiah Denton, which was a book about an American airman who spent 7.5 years tortured in a Vietnamese concentration camp called the Hanoi Hilton, as a joke, concentration camp in the capital of Vietnam. I just read the Hanoi Hilton before October 1987 when I had my first prison experience. And so many of the techniques used to keep your mind and to keep your focus and to continue to maintain your health and use exercise no matter how limited your space and so on, guided me to make the time in Zambia, in Lusaka Central Prison, a time of victory out of which so many good things came. The book prepared me for the experience. You can be empowered by books. Employ your time in improving yourself by other men's writing so that you will come easily by what others have labored hard for. You can get true discipleship in books. Next to the Holy Scriptures, the greatest aid to the life of faith may be Christian biographies. Victorious Christians. The reading of good biography forms an important part of Christians' education. It provides him with numberless illustrations for use in his own service. He learns to assess the true worth of character, to glimpse a work goal for his life, to decide how best to attain this goal, what self-denial is needed to curb unworthy aspirations. And all the time he learns how God breaks into the dedicated life to bring about his own purposes. We need to focus on those who change the world. Biography transmits personality. Who can gauge the inspiration to the cause of missions of great biographies like those of William Carey, Adoniram Judson, Hudson Taylor, C.T. Studd? The impact of these lives. History is but the lengthy shadow of great men and women. Enrich your life, your work, your family, and your ministry. Those that love reading have everything within their reach. For a small price, you can visit other lands and great periods of history. Learn from some of the greatest minds and world shapers. Grapple with great issues. Learn in a space of a few hours what others have grappled with and researched and studied for their whole lives. Ordinary people have big TVs. Extraordinary people have big libraries. It's not hoarding if it's books. Reading can seriously damage your ignorance. There's no such thing as too many books. It's just not enough shelves. A house is not a home without cats or books. It's true. A home is made by books and by cats. And talking about cats, have you heard of letting the cat out of the bag? Now, the cat in question was not simply the ship's cat, although feline sailors were often kept on board to keep down the mice and the rats, which could eat the rations and gnaw through the ropes and endanger everyone's lives, actually, not to mention bubonic plague. And so, I don't know if you've come across the tabby cats. These tabby cats are very popular. Have you noticed they've all got a kind of M on their forehead? That's one of the traits of them. Now, tabby cats were specifically bred by the Royal Navy to be great mouse hunters. They took the Egyptian cats that were worshipped as gods that protected the grain stores of Egypt, and they mated them with the European wildcat. So the European wildcat That's where they got the stripes. And unbelievable mouser capabilities of the Egyptian cats made the tabby. And these tabbies were enlisted in the Royal Navy, and that's how they ended up in South Africa, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and all over the world, wherever the Royal Navy went. And so if you've got a tabby, these tabbies are directly related to Egyptian gods and European wildcats and Royal Navy sailors. Now, in this case, letting the cat out of the bag didn't refer to the felines, but to a cat of nine tails, a whip that was used for punishing sailors. It consists of three cords divided into three strands attached to a wooden stick or a knot. It was kept in a bag, so whenever the cat was let out of the bag, it meant somebody was going to get into trouble. Although the term has now come to mean disclosing a secret, the underlying idea still is the disclosure is likely to get someone into trouble. So letting the cat out of the bag, it comes from a Royal Navy term. You may have heard this sounding disgusting term of no room to swing a cat. Not enough room to swing a cat. But the cat in question again was the cat of nine tails. The term describes a space without enough room to swing the cat or the whip, namely a very small space. So in this context, although swinging the cat does not involve cruelty to animals, which I first thought when I heard this, what disgusting thing, so no room to swing cats. Who swings a cat? But it certainly involved cruelty to humans, but it didn't involve cruelty to cats. Humans were punished in the Royal Navy with lashes for what we would consider fairly minor offenses today. You know, like not saluting an officer or insubordination or anything like that. So any kind of bad attitude would be enough to get you 40 lashes with the cat of nine tails. And you've also heard about a place being chock-a-block full. Well, chock-a-block again comes from the tackles and the chocks and the blocks that they would have on board any ship. And so when a place is chock-a-block full, it's again a Royal Navy term that has entered into English language. Don't ever judge a book by its movie. This is especially true when it comes to so-called films that are meant to be based on the Bible. I think some of the worst films out there in the Christian circuit are films that purport to have something to do with the Bible. Unbelievably unbiblical garbage that comes out there. To destroy a people, you must first sever their roots, warned Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And you can see that one of the first things that communist governments do is they burn books. And somebody said those who start by burning books will end up burning people. Except in our country, the people who burned people through necklace murders later got around to burning the books. I was in Hemingway, which is one of the finest little secondhand bookshops around. It's in Hermanus. And I looked at some of these books and said, where did you get these books from? I mean, they've got a treasure trove. And the man behind the desk said, you would weep. He said, we were told, come round to Cape Town Library. They're throwing out the old books. We came to the back and in the dumpster were these treasures. First editions, leather bound, some of the greatest books. The government had ordered, throw out all the old history books to make space for the new propaganda. I used to take my children to the library, the local Pines Library. It was a regular treat. They looked forward to it. They loved it. Our children would take maximum amount of books each week, sometimes more often, and come out to them. And I remember some people asking, do they read all these? And yes, we do, because we read every night for hours. And we stopped going to the library a long time ago because the junk that replaced the good books we used to have in there, where there used to be some of the best books, suddenly you've got books on Steve Biko and Nelson Mandela and Oliver Tambo and just one. And beautiful hardcover, full color, all illustrated, Karl Marx. Like, who wants to read about these lowlife, communist, terrorist, murdering scum? Antichrist pagans. And yet that's what's moved into our libraries. I went up to the Erfenis, the heritage library up at Fort Rucker Monument, delivering some of our books there. And the manager showed me around their library, which is just spectacular. And climate controlled, thousands of great books, leather bound, original, all sorts of magnificent things. And again, I asked, where do you get them from? She says, we were warned that they were about to ship all these books of the Pretoria Library into dumpsters, off to be incinerated. We got there in time because of a tip-off from someone who's working there and was grieved at the thought and rescued tons of these books. And many of these books in the library now were some of our great heritage, that the government had ordered incinerated. This is what pagans do. They destroy your history. A library is a hospital for the mind, you could say, as well as a gym for the mind. So I've thought it important to produce books which summarize many books, to introduce people to great books. For example, Victorious Christians has 32 biographies on 32 great Christians from Perpetua to Mary Slessor, going from the 2nd century to the 20th century, the greatest century of missions, 19th century, 19 biographies and 19 great missionaries, sketches from South African history, and also the greatest century of Reformation, 16 great biographies of 16 key reformers in the 16th century. And there's a lot of great resources that we can and should be accessing. But let's consider the power of the printer page. You may have heard of the 26 lead soldiers of the alphabet. In fact, Karl Marx said he'd conquer the world with the 26 lead soldiers of the alphabet. In other words, the printing press. I remember hearing it in Mozambique when I on my first mission, 1982. The missionaries taught us how to read, yes, but it's a communist who gave us something to read. And in that challenge, galvanized me to think we must get more literature into the field in Africa. How outrageous that missionaries taught the people how to read and the communists gave them things to read. And so that's why I started to write to good friends of mine, James Kennedy, George Grant, and others. Can you donate books to us? Your books that are damaged, shop soiled, misbound, anything like this, send us your books and we'll distribute them in the field. And over this has developed our Literature for Africa ministry, where we receive container loads of it. With 26 lead soldiers of the alphabet, we can conquer the world. A drop of ink can make a million think. Think of the power of gospel literature. The Lord gave the word. Great was the company of those that published it. And at first, Bible translators like Professor John Wycliffe of Oxford University, he had to send out his lollards with handwritten translations of the Bible because there was no printing press. This is the 14th century, 1300s. And from Lutterworth, the lollards went out to sing the scriptures and to preach the scriptures and to hand out some gospel tracts, but their gospel tracts are all handwritten. So you can imagine how few they had to distribute. The written word can go where and when the human voice cannot go. Like into other people's cars, they're passing by at a traffic light. Distribution can end up in suburbs and homes where you couldn't visit otherwise. The most cost-effective way of proclaiming the gospel is literature. Literature has no passport or visa problems. We have visa problems, but literature doesn't. Literature knows no fear. We might sometimes be intimidated, but literature is not. It never loses its temper. It never gets tired. We get tired, but the literature will keep going while we're sleeping. It is never discouraged. It can tell its story over and over again when people are most receptive to read it. It can be received, read, and studied in secret. Even at shopping malls, we get Muslim women in these hijabs coming and asking for that Christian Liberation of Women tract, putting it under their tent and going off to read it in secret sometime later. It can speak without an accent. We wonder if our accents don't get in the way of the gospel proclamation sometimes. Literature never compromises its message. The written word is more permanent than the human voice. A drop of ink may make a million think. So that's been the vision of our mission for many years. Literature, importing tons of literature, containers of literature, distributing, delivering, entrusting to people tons of great Sunday school materials, curriculums, Bibles, books, New Testaments, World Missionary Press gospel booklets, libraries for teachers, libraries for pastors, textbooks for teachers. This has been one of the most important parts of our work, is to get into the hands of people good Christian material. And praise God for the ministries that make this possible, like Eagle's Nest Ministries. And this is our frontline gym. This is how, we don't need a gym membership when we can move tons of books. And Jonathan, he moves mountains. I think that's his job description. He's got to be the most popular person at our mission. He's got friends all over, not just Cape Town, but the country, because of providing these great resources, Sunday school materials, books, Bibles. We've gone far past people giving us just their offcuts and their damaged and shop-soiled books and mispackaged and bound to being given some of the best of the best outstanding groups. And for the KJV 400 in 2011, we were given thousands of KJVs to distribute in the field, which is very popular and much required in Zambia. And so we're continually sorting out Bibles and books under the watchful eye of Florence, who enjoys a rodent-free stores. Literature is important. Some people come with 4-ton and 8-ton trucks, and sometimes we get a 32-ton truck taking pallets off to the field. In this case, these were off to Zimbabwe. And so sometimes people are just coming to get a book or a box. Other times we're going into the field with our trailer with about 2.5 tons, sometimes 3 tons of materials distributed from our vehicle and getting to people as far afield as Sudan. So any questions, any comments on you are what you read? Power the printed page. Questions, comments, complaints?
It's incredible how children love it when you read to them. My son is only 2 years old, and his favorite thing is for me to read to him. Not even his books. If I'm reading any book, he'll sit on my lap and start demanding I read out loud. So, I mean, I've read through nearly half a book on Christology to him out loud. I mean, he obviously doesn't understand a word I'm saying, but he just associates me talking with a book to, you know, quality time with dad. So it's incredible how he makes that association.
Yes. Oh, I think reading time's most important, certainly in a father's life, reading time with his children, absolutely key.
I have a question and a statement. Like, my daughter, she's an avid reader also, and I have a struggle in finding good things for her to read. I mean, like, I went to Boxy Twins and stuff, like the older literature, but I have a hard time figuring out what is actually good and appropriate, especially being a Christian. And like, I did the Alice in Wonderland, which is an old one, but I ended up throwing it away. And
Lewis Carroll.
Yes, and but because I knew it was old, and I that is timely. I mean, timeless, of course. So, are we going to be going through like books that are good? That
yes.
We, okay.
Very much. Very much.
Also.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yes.
So, yeah.
Definitely. And in fact, I've had a philosophy since we started Christian Liberty Books in 1995 of never stocking anything that we haven't read or that we don't know or that we don't trust the author or the publisher. So, for example, we've had people coming in off the street saying, do you have Joel Osteen's? And say, no. Well, how do you know? I said, well, we've got 6,000 titles here, but I know we don't have them. How do you know that? Well, we don't stock books of people that we don't trust. Now, why wouldn't you trust Joel Osteen? People coming across the threshold asking, do you have Joyce Meyer's? No. Do you have the Prayer of Jabez? No, but we've got the Mantra of Jabez. So, the counter. So, I think it's so important to have standards. We shouldn't just be, honestly, there's some bad words you could use, but on a bookshop that'll stock anything is not Christian. You've got to be selective. And we try to be super selective. But there's a lot of good things. Now, that's the bookshop. The library, different. We've got some bad books in our library. I've got the Quran. I've got Das Kapital. We've got Marxist Manifesto and all that. Because as a mission, we've got to know what our enemies are teaching too. So we will have the Book of Mormon and so on too, but we won't sell that. That's not in the bookshop, but that's in our library. So I believe as a missionary, sometimes you might be called to have to understand what the Bhagavad Gita says so that you can reach Hindus and so on. But that's not something we'd stock or sell. I've had people coming asking, do you sell Qurans? And we say, no, but if you want a Quran, you just go down to the Islamic Propagation Center. They'll give you one. There's no need for me to sell what the Muslims are giving away. Yes, so, but there's good material. I don't think Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland is in our top 1,000 books worth reading, but it's not that bad in that it's not as bad as Harry Potter and the garbage they're trying to push as textbooks in schools. But it does demonstrate a frivolous worldview and all of that. Still, there's some things you could learn, but mostly critical. Mm. But yes, I wouldn't put on a required reading list.